Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Eddie Mair.
Matt Hancock live at 5. It's Friday. It's 4:45. It's Simon Marks's American Week.
Eddie, at the end of this particular American week, it's almost more interesting to dwell on the things that didn't happen rather than those that did. Because today must be breathtakingly disappointing yet again for the QAnon conspiracy theory believing supporters of former President Donald Trump. They had, you see, persuaded themselves that by some unconstitutional hocus pocus, yesterday, March the 4th, was going to see his triumphant return to power. It was a big date in their diary, the real inauguration day, they insisted, so big that the Trump Hotel, just round the corner from the White House, sensing crowds of people arriving to see the former president's resurrection, took the very sensible precaution of tripling its room rates. At least a big payday for them was one sure bet in a Washington that otherwise did not deliver.
Together in the coming years, we will carry forward the torch of American liberty. We will lead the conservative movement and the Republican Party back to a totally conclusive victory. And we've had tremendous victories, don't ever forget.
The former president himself didn't deliver much either in his first big post-presidential speech. Last Sunday at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference in Florida, he did nothing at all to dissuade his supporters from believing the conspiracy theory that predicted his immediate comeback. Although he did seem to indicate a more orthodox political approach might lie ahead.
With your help, we will take back the House, we will win the Senate, and then a Republican president will make a triumphant return to the White House. And I wonder who that will be. Who will that be? I wonder.
It's a puzzler, to be sure. There was, of course, a serious and very dangerous side to the expectation that by now Donald Trump would be settling back into the Oval Office.
This threat is credible. And it's real.
That's Congressman Mike McCall, a Republican from Texas, disclosing on CNN that intelligence agencies were warning members of Congress about an imminent attempt to launch a fresh assault on the building in a bid to grease the wheels for the former president's return.
Yeah, I think President Trump has a responsibility to tell them to stand down. It's a right-wing militia group. They think this is a true inauguration day. And that is the threat we face right now.
There was no attempt yesterday to seize the Capitol, but that's partly because it is now behind an unscalable fence that encircles the building and is topped with very sharp razor wire. It's also due to the fact that there are still thousands of National Guard troops on the streets of this city, and Capitol Hill police are now asking them to stay here for at least another 2 months rather than pulling out on schedule in 10 days' time. There were some very unsettling questions raised this week about why it took so long for the Pentagon to authorize the deployment of those troops in the first place. William Walker, the head of the Washington, D.C. National Guard, told a congressional committee about the panicked phone call he received from the head of the Capitol Police as President Trump's armed supporters were breaching the complex on January the 6th.
His voice cracking with emotion indicated that there was a dire emergency at the Capitol. And he requested the immediate assistance of as many available National Guardsmen that I could muster. Immediately after that 149 call, I alerted the U.S. Army senior leadership of the request. The approval for Chief Sun's request would eventually come from the Acting Secretary of Defense at 5:08 p.m., about 3 hours and 19 minutes later.
3 hours and 19 minutes. That's how long it took political hacks installed by President Trump in the upper echelons of the Pentagon just weeks before the deadly insurrection to deploy troops to deal with the deadly insurrection incited by the president they served. And to think, Washington used to worry about the missing 18 minutes of Richard Nixon's Watergate tapes. Now members of Congress have a much longer period of unexplained activity to probe.
The prior administration had contracted for not nearly enough vaccine to cover adults in America.
At the White House on Wednesday, President Biden was flaying the Trump administration for a different reason and providing his latest version of the answer to that all-important question, when will every American who wants to get a COVID-19 vaccine be able to get a COVID-19 vaccine?
About 3 weeks ago, we were able to say that we'll have enough vaccine supply for adults by the end of July. And I'm pleased to announce today, as a consequence of the stepped-up process that I've ordered and just outlined, this country will have enough vaccine supply, I'll say it again, for every adult in America by the end of May.
So just to review the journey taken by that particular bouncing ball, when the president was first sworn in 6 weeks ago, he confidently predicted that there would be enough vaccine for everyone by the spring. Then, having taken a closer look at the detail, he concluded the magic day would in fact arrive in late July. Now, he says, it will be here by the end of May. I will merely point out that in the nation's capital itself, we are still not close to having enough vaccine, and the end of May feels like it's just round the corner. The mayor here has just announced that she is scrapping the website residents have been required to use in that mad scramble to secure vaccine appointments that I described last week on the program. That bold decision was taken after the system crashed 3 days running. A new website, we're assured, is coming next week, and crazy idea, I know, we'll all be able to register to get jabbed, and then they'll tell us when an appointment is available. I know, it is truly breakthrough thinking.
Effective next Wednesday, all businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%.
In the Lone Star State of Texas this week, there wasn't much thinking going on at all. That is Governor Greg Abbott, a close ally of former President Trump, announcing that with vaccines coming, it's time for the state entirely to abandon social distancing and restrictions on business activity. And there was more.
Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Cheers there from freedom-loving Texans as he announced a rending of garments, at least the ones designed to protect you from the pandemic. That and similar moves made this week by the governor of Mississippi led to presidential consternation back in Washington.
We are on the cusp of being able to fundamentally change the nature of this disease because of the way in which we're able to get vaccines in people's arms. The last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. Take off your mask. Forget it. It still matters.
Now, as the car sticker that is ubiquitous throughout the state warns, don't mess with Texas. And it turns out that Governor Greg Abbott didn't much like being called a Neanderthal.
President Biden's administration itself is exposing Texans and Americans to COVID-19 through illegal immigrants that they are allowing to come into the state of Texas who are positive for COVID-19 and being released into Texas communities. What President Biden is doing is Neanderthal.
Just a point about the Neanderthals, because they may be getting a bad rap here. They were, after all, ancestors of ours who developed tools made from stone, learned how to make fire, created early forms of music, glue, and woven clothing, and used medicinal plants to treat disease. And that last bit's important, because it would suggest that they were on guard against a pandemic. So probably face mask wearers rather than skeptics? I don't know, that may be a stretch. But no more of a stretch than Governor Abbott's entirely false contention that the source of COVID-19 in Texas is filthy foreigners crossing the border from Mexico. But by last night on Fox News, presenter Judge Jeanine Pirro was taking that dog whistle and blowing it as loudly as she could.
Listen to me. They've got COVID. They've got all kinds of diseases. They are being released into the United States. Now, you're not going to tell me that a governor is going to shut me down and not allow me to do my job and let in illegals because we've got a heart.
a heart so large it might burst. Luckily this week, there was an example of one American with a genuinely big heart, bringing a badly needed dose of common sense to the public discussion here.
Vaccine, I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late.
The great Dolly Parton receiving her first jab of the Moderna vaccine that she helped fund with a multi-million dollar philanthropic donation disclosed a few weeks ago. She joked, literally getting a taste of her own medicine and filling the gulf created by the absence here of any meaningful government vaccine education program.
I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it, if we could get back to that. But anyhow, I just wanted to encourage everybody, because the sooner we get to feeling better, the sooner we are going to get back to being normal. So I just want to say to all of you cowards out there, don't be such a chicken squat. Get out there and get shot.
Well, exactly. Now, I'm not entirely sure how you define the term chicken squat. I haven't spent enough time in Tennessee, clearly, but I think it's definitely possible that it applies to New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo. He is one of the most prominent and powerful Democrats in this country, and he's now facing claims by three separate women of inappropriate behavior towards them. He could have resigned this week. Several top Democrats in the state are urging him to do so, but instead, he dug in.
I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional, and I truly and deeply apologize for it. I feel awful about it, and frankly, I am embarrassed by it.
He's also beleaguered by a separate political scandal involving a cover-up by his staff of the number of COVID-19 deaths in New York State nursing homes. But it's the issues relating to his treatment of women that will end up doing him in. Last night, viewers of the CBS Evening News heard directly from one of his accusers, his former aide, Charlotte Bennett.
He asked me if age difference mattered. He also explained that he was fine with anyone over 22. It's not an issue of my feelings. It's an issue of his actions. The fact is that he was sexually harassing me, and he has not apologized for sexually harassing me. And he can't even use my name.
Much of the alleged conduct took place in 2019 and 2020, long after every prominent figure in America must have understood the impact and import of the Me Too movement here. The governor's crisis is creating a predicament at the White House. President Biden is personally close to Governor Cuomo, a mentor to him, in fact. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has been dancing on the head of a pin.
The benefit of doing a briefing every day is that I can certainly speak on behalf of the president and the vice president. And so let me reiterate that they both believe that every woman coming forward should be heard, should be treated with dignity and treated with respect. As you all know, the New York Attorney General will oversee an independent investigation with subpoena power. And the governor's office said he will fully cooperate. And we certainly support that moving forward.
It's going to be tough to keep articulating that mantra for weeks, if not months to come. Which brings us to Dr. Seuss. When my kids were younger, they demanded I repeat like a mantra the books by that classic American children's author and illustrator of the 1950s. But this week, half a dozen of his works were removed from print. I tell you what, let me tell you the story this way. It's a pretty good zoo, said young Gerald McGrew, and the fellow who runs it seems proud of it too. But that classic old book by the great Dr. Seuss is now on a hit list, soon going out of use. The publishers, you see, say it's racist in tone, and also they claim are five other Seuss tomes. They fault them for characters no longer funny, but stereotypically racially clumsy. Africans shown with rings through their noses, Asians with chopsticks and rice bowls, and poses so cartoonishly crude they must no longer be printed, or sold, distributed, or otherwise minted. So they'll pull them and pulp them, proscribe them and dump them, promote other texts that are more up to snuff, instead of this offensive, out-of-date stuff, saving young minds from some stories that rhyme. Only six, mind you. Eddie the rest. Stand the test of time.
Simon Marks's American Week, back next Friday at 4:45. This is LBC. I'm Eddie Mayer.